Welcome to Stock Stories, episode 129. Welcome. Welcome to Stock Stories. This is the podcast dedicated to helping you, the individual investor, make better investing decisions. Thank you for joining me today. I am Alex. I'm your host and stock storyteller. And that's what we do. On this show, we look at case studies of real companies as well as mental models, because I believe that both are so important for learning and understanding new concepts in investing. The case studies are the practical side. We look at what's really happened in the world and look at real investment opportunities. And then on the other side, we look at mental models. That's more of the academic, philosophical side. What are the thinking processes? What are the thought processes that we can apply to our investment practice? And so that's what we study on this show. And one of our goals on this show is to go through every single company in the S&P 500. And we will cover other companies as well. I know I get a fair amount of requests from you, the audience, on specific companies to cover. Thank you for those suggestions. And we'll be covering other companies as well. But that's the main, the core of the show. So thank you so much for joining me. And today we've got another company for you. Last week we talked about Hasbro, the gaming and toy company that has had an interesting history, interesting life as a company, and a lot of successes and failures along the way. And today we're going to talk about its main competitor over the years. Let's talk about Mattel. All right, Mattel, ticker symbol M-A-T. Mattel is a gaming and toy company, just like Hasbro, the company we discussed last week. Mattel is a business most famous for brands like Barbie and Hot Wheels, and they're a pretty iconic American toy company. But let's talk about first where they started, where they came from. We always like to look at the history on the show and then go into the main business model and then look at the financials and then kind of look to the future and see what we think about the business going forward. So first, the history. Mattel was founded by a couple named Elliot and Ruth Handler back in 1945. And they lived out in California, and they started out by making furniture. They were just selling furniture. And Ruth was a secretary at Paramount Pictures over there in California, which is the movie studios. And Elliot was an industrial engineer at the same company, and he made light fixtures. So she had a lot of the organizational skills, the admin skills, and he had the physical tinkering kind of skills. And they ended up joining up with a friend of theirs named Harold Mattson. And together they formed a company called Mattel Creations. And they named it Mattel just by combining Matt with L from Elliot. So that forms Mattel. And Mattson soon had to sell out part of his business because of some health issues, unfortunately. So the business really went to Ruth and Elliot, but the name remained the same. It remained Mattel. And what they started doing was they used scrap metal and plastic from the old business, which was making and selling furniture out of their garage, to create dollhouses. And it turned out the dollhouses became a big hit. So much so, in fact, that they had $100,000 in revenue and $30,000 in profit in the first year. Now, think about that. That $30,000 is equivalent to over $425,000 in 2020. So that's not a bad first year of business. When you adjust for inflation, it ended up becoming pretty good. Now, unfortunately, competition started coming in and they beat them with lower cost products and higher quality products with more detail in the dollhouses. So they're kind of mom and pop shop at making these dollhouses started to fail, but they proved that they could make toys successfully. And so they decided to introduce other products like a make-believe makeup set and a mini ukulele. Now, even though sales were good, they started to lose some money actually because some of their products started to have quality issues. And they realized very quickly that they needed unique, high quality products in order to really stand out as a company. So they decided to incorporate in 1948, and then with a $20,000 loan from Ruth's brother-in-law, and also by hiring an outside inventor, they were able to invent a new toy. They invented a music box that only played when the child turned the crank. Now, at this time, music boxes were kind of popular toys in Europe, and so they wanted to bring this toy over to America. But the music boxes of the time, they were pretty simple mechanically. You cranked them, and then they played, and then they played until they were done, basically, based on how much you cranked them. But this music box was unique. It only played when the child actually cranked it. So that was kind of a unique feature. And this turned out to be a hit and helped the company survive. So sales started to grow. And by 1955, the company had reached $5 million in sales. So pretty successful at this point in time. Now the company took a risk and they spent $500,000 on a year-long sponsorship of this new show on television called the Mickey Mouse Club. And that allowed Mattel's toys to be marketed directly to children through TV. Now, this was a pretty new idea at the time. Nobody was sponsoring television shows, let alone sponsoring them to market to children. I mean, this was pretty revolutionary at the time. So Mattel took a really big risk. They spent $500,000 to do so. And it ended up being very successful. I mean, the Mickey Mouse Club was part of Disney, and Disney became very successful around this time as well. So the companies basically started a really good partnership. And sales for Mattel by 1957 hit $9 million. So think about that. From 1955 to 1957, sales almost doubled from $5 million to $9 million. And then in 1958, just 1 year after that, they almost doubled again at $14 million. So Mattel was really in this high phase of growth. People were starting to realize who they were, and the company was starting to be able to scale up really big with their toys, and they were producing hit toys, basically. Now, the handlers noticed that their daughter, whose name was Barbara, preferred to play with adult-looking paper dolls instead of baby dolls. And so they came up with this idea, what if we created a three-dimensional adult doll for our daughter? And so they invented a plastic teenage fashion model, and they called it Barbie, nicknamed after their daughter. Now, Barbie exploded in popularity, and it became a cultural phenomenon. Now, clothes and accessories for Barbie were sold separately, and so that also helped increase sales in addition to sales of the doll itself. And ever since then, Barbie has been a mainstay in Mattel's lineup. And really, frankly, it's probably their strongest brand and has always been their strongest brand. And we'll see how Barbie has evolved a little bit over the years too. But that was a huge hit for Mattel, and they ended up increasing in popularity. So Mattel went public in 1963, and they became listed on the New York Stock Exchange in 1965. Now, I want to just make a quick distinction here. Just because a company goes public doesn't mean it necessarily gets listed on a certain exchange. So that's how that can happen. Sometimes you sell shares to the public, but you don't have to do it on the New York Stock Exchange per se. So that's why there's a gap there in the years. So they went public, and they kept doing their thing. You know, Mattel was on fire. They were making products that kids love, that parents wanted to buy for their children. And frankly, they were one of the only games in town. Like Mattel and Hasbro, they dominated the toy and game industry in America, especially during this time. And they also introduced other successful toys throughout the 1960s, including the Hot Wheels toy car product line. And I actually remember Hot Wheels because back in the 90s, Hot Wheels were still around. And actually, they're still around today. So that brand, that product line has succeeded over the decades as well. And then also during the 1960s, they ended up making a lot of acquisitions. And they were able to do this because they were aided by the fact that sales skyrocketed from $26 million in 1963 to over $100 million in 1965. So before, they were experiencing pretty fast growth in the 50s. But once they went public and Hot Wheels and Barbie came out, I mean, they basically quadrupled their business in 2 years. And I mean, think about the kind of growth that that is. That's incredible. You know, now they're a large cap company that, and we'll get into the numbers today about their financial state today. But back then, wow, I mean, they were this huge growth company. In the 1970s, Mattel purchased and then sold the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus, actually. But like I said, they sold it because it just didn't really fit with their business that much. And you know, you see companies do this sometimes, especially when they're really successful. They have so much money lying around that they think, well, you know, what do? Let's expand. Let's keep growing. So let's start buying up businesses. And sometimes companies decide to buy businesses that have nothing to do with their business. I mean, yeah, buying Barnum and Bailey Circus is somewhat tangential to the toy and game industry because a lot of kids go to the circus. But at the same time, it's not exactly their business. Their business is producing toys and games. So anyway, they eventually sold that. And that's just kind of a lesson that companies often make acquisitions that don't make a lot of sense. So fortunately, they were able to get out of that deal without holding it for too long. Now, in 1973, the company got caught up with some accounting issues. And whenever you hear accounting issues with a company, just run the other direction. It's never a good thing. So there was a CFO at the time. His name was Seymour Rosenberg. He made the company's numbers look a little bit better than they were by recording orders as sales, even though many of the orders the company received were canceled or never shipped. And so when you do that, that's kind of like juicing the numbers a little bit. So the SEC ended up investigating Mattel and Rosenberg got fired. Unfortunately, the handlers were kind of caught in the mix with this whole thing. And by 1980, they ended up cashing out their Mattel stock, which was about 12% of the company. And they decided to move on. And the board of directors was restructured. And unfortunately, this is the case of a situation where the founders, you know, built up a company from nothing. They made it super successful. And then someone else has to come in and kind of just screw it up for them. Now, they still got to cash out and leave semi-gracefully from Mattel. And the company still bears the original name. And they still sell the products that they invented. But, you know, it's kind of a bummer, right? Like, they got kicked out, basically. So this is kind of a natural transitioning of companies from the founder stage to more of, I don't know what I would call it, maybe the corporate-y type phase where outside investors come in, where outside board of directors come in. People start to come in to run the business who weren't around at the beginning. And that just signifies another phase in the company's life cycle. So now things started to change because video games started to come on the scene in the 80s. So in 1984, a few private equity firms ended up supplying over $230 million to Mattel in order to keep the firm afloat because Mattel was trying to get into video games, but they just weren't that good at it. They suffered a lot of failures. And if you think about it, it was kind of difficult to get into this because now you're basically trying to transition from a game company, a toy company, to a kind of like a technology company, really, because now you're dealing with things that have integrated circuits in them. Especially back then, these are complex and very expensive devices to design and manufacture. You had to ensure quality. It added complexity to the entire business in order to try to create video games. And Mattel just, they weren't experts at this. This isn't what they did historically. They were used to making plastic dolls and doing that really, really well. So they suffered some losses and some private equity firms came in to give some assistance. Now by 1987, the stock had fallen to just $10 a share. So things were pretty bad. Now a man named John Amerman, he became chairman around this time and he decided to try to transform the business and restore it to its former glory. So he cut expenses and payroll significantly to save money. And he decided to focus on key brands like Barbie, Hot Wheels, etc. And he partnered with Disney to produce toys. Now, are you seeing a trend between Mattel and Hasbro? They went through a lot of the same struggles and took a lot of the same actions in order to maintain their business in order to survive. So fortunately for Mattel, by the time the 1990s came around, Barbie became cool again. And sales of Barbies went up and up and up. In fact, they went up to over $1 billion out of total company sales of about $1.8 billion. So Barbie, in a way, Barbie really saved the company in the 90s. And in fact, Barbie was so successful, Mattel estimated that around this time, 95% of all girls in America aged 3 to 11 had multiple Barbie dolls. Multiple Barbie dolls. So that is just how successful this brand became. And think about the cultural capital of that. I mean, it's amazing. New versions of Barbie were being made and they were becoming culturally relevant again. Barbie's resurgence, in a way, saved Mattel, just like G.I. Joe's resurgence saved Hasbro. So that is a big part of the story here. Now, in the early 1990s, Mattel also started moving and looking toward international expansion. So that became a significant part of the growth story as well. In 1993, they acquired a company called Fisher-Price, which was the leading baby and preschooler toy company. And this ended up being a pretty good acquisition for them. They still own the Fisher-Price brands today. It cost about $1.2 billion. So not a cheap acquisition, but they paid for it in an all-stock deal, which can usually be a good thing, especially if the stock is cheap. So in 1995, Mattel made a large offer to merge with Hasbro in secret, and we cover this a little bit in the Hasbro episode, but Hasbro turned down the offer because they were afraid of antitrust regulation. Now, the offer that Mattel made to Hasbro was a 70% premium over Hasbro's stock price. I mean, that's incredible. Usually deals like that do command some kind of a premium to the price on the open market because they want to convince the other company to take the deal. But 70%, I mean, that's a huge markup. And Mattel clearly wanted to just eliminate all competitors and be the dominant toy maker in America and in the world. But Hasbro, they just didn't really want to do it. And at the end of the day, sometimes deals fall through, and that's what happened here. So to this day, Mattel and Hasbro still have survived, and they still compete with each other. Though we'll see which company is kind of winning that battle soon. By 1996, sales had increased substantially, but international growth had started to slow. But around this time, so Mattel, they kept on with their acquisitions. They purchased Tyco Toys, the third largest toy maker, which had products like Sesame Street products and electric race cars. So they said, okay, fine. Hasbro, you're not going to let us buy you. Well, we're going to look for other companies to buy. Kept on making acquisitions. Then there was a very interesting acquisition in 1999. Mattel purchased a company called The Learning Company, and this was marketed as an edutainment company, which made brands like Carmen Sandiego and Reader Rabbit on CD-ROMs. Now, I actually remember this because Reader Rabbit and Carmen Sandiego, those are some of my first exposure to computer games and computers in general back when I was growing up. And so I remember like those games were really fun and kind of got me into computers. And so The Learning Company, they were definitely making a mark across the country with those brands. And so Mattel kind of saw that potential, and they paid a high price for this company. They paid $3.5 billion for this company. So they definitely had high expectations. The company started losing money, in fact, though, even before the deal closed. Now, keep in mind, in this period in economic history, it's one of very high valuations, especially for any company that had to do with the internet or computers. So unfortunately, Mattel lost a lot of money with this acquisition. They ended up offloading the company at a loss a few years later. There was debt that had to be paid off. There was a lawsuit. It was all around a very bad deal for Mattel and Mattel shareholders. So Mattel's acquisition hungry management, they were able to make some good deals, some mediocre deals, some bad deals, but this one was a really bad one. And it just kind of goes to show you, like, when companies make acquisitions, it always just pays to be selective, because sometimes the deal can go well and the earnings are accretive to the parent company and things work out really well for shareholders, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes management just pays too high a price because they're so focused on empire building that they do not have the best interests of the long-term shareholder and, frankly, the long-term prospects of the business in mind. So in the 2000s, Mattel started facing increased competition. There is a company that came out with a new line of dolls called Bratz, and those debuted in 2001 and quickly took market share away from Barbie. They're kind of like just a different style doll that just had a different look and feel, and it really resonated with girls across America. And the Bratz started to just take market share away from Barbie. And also, the Leapfrog company, an educational company, they put out the LeapPad system, which took market share away from Fisher-Price. They were coming out with these fancy electronic gadgets for younger children. And so they started losing market share there. Now, Mattel managed to continue to survive and still sell a lot of the same products that they were used to selling, but they had to innovate somewhat. And one of these innovations was in 2016, Mattel launched three different body types for Barbie. So up until this time, Barbie pretty much had the exact same super skinny, petite body type. But then now they have a curvy type Barbie, a tall type Barbie, and a petite type Barbie. And when I discovered this, I was like, wait, this only happened 4 years ago? Like, why didn't this happen years and years ago? But nevertheless, I digress. It makes natural sense that girls would want to play with dolls, or children in general would want to play with dolls that look more like them or like the people around them. So I'm glad that Mattel did that. And then in 2019, they took it a step further and produced gender-neutral dolls. So that was created and launched in 2019. So Mattel has been taking some progressive steps forward in expanding its product line. But I can't help but wonder, is it too little too late? Now let's get into the business today. So Mattel still designs and produces toys and related consumer products. That's what they do. They've always made toys and games, and they still do that today. They're still famous for brands like Barbie, like Hot Wheels, and American Girl is another one of their big brands. So they have four product categories. They have dolls, so Barbie, American Girl, Polly Pocket. They have infant slash toddler category, which that's where Fisher-Price falls in. And also Thomas and Friends is another big brand in that segment. There are vehicles. So those are things like Hot Wheels, Jurassic World, and Cars from Pixar. And then they have action figures and building sets and games. So they kind of lump all those things into one category. Those are things like the card game of Uno, or WWE action figures, or Toy Story toys. So sales are reasonably diversified between each of these four categories. And the infant toddler categories leads the pack slightly, but they're all pretty well reasonably diversified as far as sales go. So that's kind of a good thing. Now, like Hasbro, the business is highly seasonal, and most of the sales for Mattel happen in the second half of the year. Now, Mattel relies heavily on selling through third-party retailers like Amazon and Target and Walmart, again, just like Hasbro does. And Walmart and Target combined account for about a third of Mattel's sales. So the 10 largest customers account for half of sales. So sales are somewhat distributed, just like Hasbro is. And the big retailers, that's where people get their toys. And it makes sense. Toys R Us, they don't exist anymore. So it's basically Walmart, Amazon, and Target. So sales are split somewhat evenly between North America and the rest of the world, with a slight weighting toward North America. So Mattel is definitely still an international business. But they do have a significant portion of their sales coming from the United States. So let's look at the financials now, and we can see what kinds of trends are indicating things to us about the business. And for the sake of comparison, as we usually do on the show, I'm only going to compare 2 years worth of numbers, because numbers can get really tricky in audio on a podcast, and I like to keep things as simple for you as possible. So in 2012, I'm going to compare those numbers to 2019 numbers. So sales, how much revenue did the business generate? Well, in 2012, the company made about $6.5 billion in sales. In 2019, it was only $4.5 billion. So the sales have fallen. And then net income, unfortunately, the profit's fallen as well, from about $750 million in 2012 to an over $200 million loss in 2019. So sales have been going down, and profits have been going down and going negative. And then likewise, earnings per share, from over $2 a share in 2012 to over 60 cents per share in losses in 2019. Man, what's going on here? Now let's look at the balance sheet. They had over $1 billion in cash in 2012, and now they have about half of that in cash, just about $600 million. And then what about the debt? Well, the debt went from $1.1 billion to over double, now almost $3 billion in debt. So like, things are literally going the opposite of the way you want to go in every metric here. So sales have gone down, profits gone down, earnings have gone down, cash has gone down, debt has gone up. Now let's look at the operating cash flow. Let's look at the cash flow statement really quick. So they had over $1 billion in operating cash flow in 2012, and now just under $200 million in operating cash flow. So that has shrunk significantly as well. Investing cash flow has shrunk significantly, from about $1 billion being put into the business to about $100 million being put into the business. So that's a significant decrease in capital spending. Let's see here. Also, the financing cash flow has decreased. So they went from $400 million being put into financing, and now it's almost non-existent. But that's because of no dividends. So basically, this used to be a company that paid dividends. In 2012, they had $1.24 per share paid out as dividends. And then the last few years, they cut it at first and then eliminated it altogether. So no dividend payments since 2017, which I think was a prudent move by management to preserve capital. So I think that was a good move. Nonetheless, it really is terrible if you depended on that dividend income. And then the shares outstanding, at least there's some good news here. The shares outstanding have been around 340 million this whole stretch of time. So between 2012 and 2019, the shares were neither diluted significantly nor reduced significantly. So that hasn't affected things that much. So what's going on here? What can we take away as the big picture? Well, Mattel is suffering financially, frankly. They haven't been profitable for, I think, about 3 years or so, since I think 2016, looking at the numbers. Things started to go downhill around 2017. So here are some closing thoughts, as well as some thoughts about valuation. So Mattel seems like a business with iconic brands that's slowly squandered its position as one of the world's leading toy makers. Right now, it just seems like they're kind of riding off of the success of old brands like Barbie and Hot Wheels and Fisher-Price. Now, studying the toy industry, it seems to me like innovation is key. Like, you have to innovate because you never know when you're going to make your next hit. And how can Mattel innovate to make its next hit when capital expenditures were cut by 60% in the past 2 years? That's something that I saw looking through Mattel's materials, and I was kind of shocked. Like, wow, that's a huge decrease in capital expenditures. Now, I kind of understand this because if you're going to survive at all, you have to be profitable. You have to have some kind of cash to survive. And I get why Mattel is doing this. They're trying to be prudent. They're trying to be prudent, cutting the dividend and eliminating it and cutting as much capital expenditures as they can. But my problem with this is, are they, once they get that cash and are able to maintain stable profitability, which I think that they will be able to in the next probably year or two, what are they going to do then? Are they going to then ramp up R&D, or how are they going to innovate at that point? That's what I'm not sure about. So the company loaded up on a lot of debt in the past decade. They decreased their cash position, and that was just not a good thing. But management does seem focused on returning the company to profitability. So I look at it as they need to make short-term sacrifices in order to have the cash to reinvest in the future. I just hope they reinvest it well. I'm not really sure, because management in the past, in good times, they haven't allocated capital, in my opinion, that well. They spent a lot of money in the past on dividends and share repurchases, presumably to please Wall Street, but no new major hits have come off of their product line. They've just been tweaking the same products they've had for generations, which in many ways are great products. We all love their products because we buy them, at least based on the sales. People still buy them, but they're just tweaking things here and there. And, you know, once in a while, they'll get a nice boost from a movie deal like Jurassic World, and sales of one segment of products will take off. But there's no major new hit that is owned by Mattel. Like, Mattel had to pay, I think it was NBC Universal was the intellectual property holder for Jurassic World. Like, they had to pay them royalties for the right to produce that toy. So yeah, they're making some money off of it, but it's not like if it was their own intellectual property, like the next Barbie or the next Hot Wheels, where they get to keep the lion's share of the profits, or they get to keep all the profits, actually, rather, because they would own the entirety of the intellectual property. So I don't really see any hits like that, and that worries me, because I think a business like this, you really need that based on how the history goes and how we've seen things with Hasbro as well. So there is some diversification across different types of toys, so that's one positive. But I just wish they weren't in such a bad financial situation. So now, the question for you and I is the price justified? Now, looking at the price of Mattel shares right now, I'm not really sure. It's trading around $10 per share, and the company was dropped from the S&P 500 a couple of years ago. So they don't have positive earnings right now, so it's hard to really say what a quote-unquote good valuation really is. I think it might be worth it to take a book value approach or an asset-based approach. I'm not sure. But it's just hard to value a business that isn't making any money and doesn't look like it's going to turn things around significantly in the future. I do think that they will become profitable again in the short to medium term, just because they're cutting expenses so much. But that cutting of expenses, I'm not sure if that will impact sales long term. I guess it depends on how they're able to innovate. So it remains to be seen. But all in all, the business, it seems kind of fickle, and I'm not sure about management, so I'm staying away. But it's interesting to watch, and I really do hope that Mattel turns things around. They have had a big role to play in the history of toys in America, just like Hasbro has. And they have some iconic brands. So who knows? Maybe a merger between Hasbro and Mattel wouldn't be such a bad idea these days. Both companies are kind of struggling, though Hasbro is definitely doing better. They actually have had some increases in sales in recent years, even if they've been small increases. But Mattel is really struggling right now. So who knows? Maybe Hasbro buys Mattel. That would be an interesting merger type situation. But those are my thoughts on Mattel, ticker symbol MAT. Thank you so much for listening to the Stock Stories podcast. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. I'm going to be here for you every single week producing new case studies of real companies or mental models for you. If you have any suggestions on the show or you just want to say hi, definitely send me a message on Instagram. So my Instagram is @stockstoryteller. And also you can email me at alex@stockstoriespodcast.com if you prefer. Now, I want to say thank you all so much for leaving me those reviews on Apple Podcasts. There's been a couple new ones up there. Thank you so much. If you want to help the show out, here's how you can do it. Go to Apple Podcasts or to Stitcher. Actually, the show is now on Stitcher for you if you're listening on Android, and leave a review. That would help me out incredibly, just to help the show get in front of new listeners. And here's what I can do. So lately I've been getting more and more requests to study different companies and put them on the show. So Alex, can you review this company? Can you talk about this company? And I'd love to be able to study all of them, but the fact is I can't now. When the show had less listeners, I was able to, you know, work in those requests pretty seamlessly. But now I'm starting to get more requests just to cover different companies. And here's what we can do. If you leave me a review either on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and you send me a message, again, either on Instagram or email, letting me know that you left me a review and what name you left it under, I will work in a episode for you on the company of your choice. Now, the company has to be publicly traded, and again, it's ultimately at my discretion, but I will do my best to work it into the normal flow of the show. So this is just a temporary thing. It's to see how it works for now. But if you would like a company of your choice to appear on the show, leave me a review and let me know that you did, and I'll try to work that in. So thank you so much for your help. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week. Have a great day. Information presented here on Stock Stories is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. You and you alone are responsible for your investment and financial decisions. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, or financial advisor that can analyze your specific situation in the context of your goals and circumstances.